session. I'm going to open the hearing on House Bill 3910. I'd like to announce that we only have about 1 hour, and so I'm going to ask everyone to keep their comments very brief. If you have a written statement, you can turn that in and then just summarize it for us. I'm going to be calling you up in groups of at least two and sometimes three, and I'd appreciate it if you would come forward and take your position when I call you, and we're going to try to be fair in allowing pros and cons to have equal amount of time, but in the interest of getting everyone in who is here today, I would appreciate your cooperation. Thank you. Council, would you please give us a summary?
Thank you, Madam Chair. House Bill 3910 creates the Uniform Computer Information Transaction Act. In your packet, you will see the -1 amendments. You will also see a letter from Victor Bonnert from the Society for Information Management, and he asked that that be submitted to the record.
Thank you. Representative Phil Barnhart? We're going to take Representative Barnhart a little bit out of order here because he needs to get to another meeting, so he's going to address the -1 amendment that has been submitted.
Thank you, Madam Chair. For the record, my name is Phil Barnhart, and I'm the state representative from District 40 in South Eugene. I asked to speak today in because I wanted to inform the committee about the -1 amendments, which are a much shorter version, and should the committee like the -1s, I think it would save us a great deal of paper. But the more important reason for favoring the -1s is that this proposed uniform code is making a law of first impression in an enormously important area of the law, which at this point is still relatively new and needs to be done very thoughtfully and very well. This commission's been working for a long time, but the American Law Institute, which normally sponsors these kinds of commissions, withdrew its sponsorship from the commission because of the direction the commission was taking. This law, the UCITA law, has been passed in two states, one of them not yet implementing it, Maryland and Virginia. I'm not aware if it's being passed in other states, although I suppose that's possible at this point. I've been busy on other things the last couple of months, as have you. The purpose of the -1 amendments is to hold in abeyance the implementation of UCITA and put in a sunset clause which automatically repeals the act on January 2nd, 2006. The purpose of this is twofold. One is to allow for necessary revisions or amendments to the proposed UCITA law that will make the law better, more protective of users and of consumers, and at the same time prevent Oregon residents from being forced to comply with the laws of the states of Maryland or potentially Virginia or other states that adopt the UCITA code and instead would require that the law of Oregon be used to interpret the contracts that might be made in this area. Rather than trying to go into details about it, I'll leave that for a lot of other people who know much more about those details than I do.
Thank you.
Thank you,
Madam
Chair.
Thank you very much, Representative Barnhart. Okay. We're going to have Jim Craven, Ray Nimmer, and John Woodard, please.
Thank you, Madam Chair. For the record, Jim Craven, representing the American Electronics Association. AEA is the nation's largest high-tech trade association, and here in Oregon we represent about 170 member companies and most of the employment in the high-tech industry. I want to thank the chairwoman and the staff for arranging this hearing. I guess we've brought a lot of people together to discuss an important issue, and I thank you for time and your attention. I hope a few other members of the committee wander by and avail themselves of this opportunity. UCITA is an issue of extensive national debate, and you can tell by the filled seats in the room that there's a lot of concern and support and opposition and et cetera about this proposed model law. It's a complex issue. It's difficult to analyze in a brief period of time, but we'll do what we can to shed some light on it here in a few minutes. Last year, the Oregon Internet Commission, which is a group authorized by the 1999 legislature, did consider this issue, and while not coming up with a endorsement of USITA as the answer to the issues of contracting in the digital environment, did say that this is an important set of issues that Oregon needs to consider, and urge the legislature and others to move forward in consideration of this host of issues. I also want to just publicly thank the Oregon State Bar and Susan Gravy, who over the last several months, and you'll hear from them in a moment, but has tried to bring a number of parties together to work on this issue and inform people about it. I'm pleased today to welcome Ray Nimmer to my right, who is a professor of law at University of Houston and the reporter, essentially the drafter of USITA on behalf of the national group NACUSL. And on his right is John Woodard, corporate counsel for Intel Corporation. So I'm going to ask Ray, and there's some handouts that we've brought along, and ask Ray to walk through kind of a little bit of the history of USITA, what it's trying to do, and then he'll turn it over to John.
Actually, I'm going to speak first. Okay. Chair Walker, thank you. My name's John Woodard. I'm a senior counsel with Intel Corporation, and I just wanted to make a couple brief comments. I've been observing the process of the drafting of this act for the last 6 years, and have seen it as a natural evolution as much as the UCC Article 2 when we moved from an agrarian to an industrial economy, and now as we have more electronic transactions and transacting in digital information, we see this as a natural evolution at Intel. We think that there's value to uniformity between the states and in the default rules, and that's all USITA is a set of default rules. It will cost a little bit more for industry to provide some of the additional remedies and things like that, but we think the uniformity is very valuable. The criticism I've heard at times, I've had trouble understanding what the point was. I did bring with me a law review or a law comment from the University of Tulane law student that at least helped me place and understand some of the criticism, and we'll leave that for those. It's about 8 or 10 pages, and it kind of summarizes what that person found. So with that, I'll turn it over to Ray Nimmer and hope we can make some progress.
Chair Walker, committee counsel, thank you for giving me a chance to speak to you today. I was going to say hello to the rest of the committee, but I'll wait for them to arrive, or perhaps next time to come up. This is, I think, as everybody in this room knows, a very significant piece of legislation. It started back in the 1980s, actually the late 80s, with the American Bar Association Committee suggesting that a study be undertaken in the area of software contracts, and that was actually before Internet became an issue. Since then, it's gone through at least 30 public hearings, not counting legislative sessions. Part of the time, those hearings were while it was included as part of the Uniform Commercial Code proposal, which was disbanded actually about 4 years ago. Part of those hearings were direct hearings of the USITA drafting committee. They're open hearings, much like this one is, except for the fact that anybody could speak at any time. It was sort of open in the purest sense. The attendance at those meetings ranged from 70 to upwards of 100 people, different people, because the meetings were held throughout the country. During that time, the drafting committee produced, I don't quite even know how many drafts, but a large number of drafts. A number of compromises were made. A number of positions changed. The committee itself consisted, actually had no representatives of the high-tech community. It consisted of 13 members, four or five of whom were academics. One was general counsel of a major corporation that is not in the technology industry. Two others were governmental attorneys, one in the litigation department at the District of Columbia, and another in the legislative drafting unit in Wisconsin. And that committee worked really hard for quite a while trying to deal with the issues that are significant here. As you will learn and already know, there are a number of areas of controversy concerning USITA. I think it's fair to say that a number of the things that are said about USITA simply are misstatements about the statute or misrepresentations about what the existing law is. There are also some topics on which I think strong policy disputes need to be talked about. As was mentioned, the statute's been adopted in two states. There are relatively few substantial amendments that have not been incorporated from those states into the uniform draft, and that reflects one of the purposes of the statute. The group that's proposing or that drafted the proposal is a group who that has representatives from all 50 states, appointed by governors in most cases or by legislative heads and others. Their main purpose in life is to draft uniform legislation proposals in important areas. It's the National Conference of Commissioners on Uniform State Laws. The acronym is NACUSL. And they consider this at a series of meetings throughout, as I mentioned, a number of years. It is really fairly common for the proposals to be broadly enacted, but also it's fairly common when you're dealing with a new area, I think, to expect some areas of controversy. I guess what I'd like to do in a few, in about 10, 15 minutes, if I have that much time, is to give you a sense of what the statute is and what it isn't. First of all, this is a contract statute. This is a statute that deals with contract law issues that are important to the high technology and the internet industries. It was vetted very thoroughly by the high tech industry in Virginia and to an even greater extent in Maryland, and has been tuned, I think, to focus on contract issues that are important as the technology industries grow. It is, though, a contract statute, and it reflects modern U.S. contract law. John mentioned that this statute contains default rules, and I guess what I'd like to do is to make it clear what that means. The basic premise of UCEDA is that parties have freedom to contract, and virtually all of the provisions of UCEDA are subject to contrary agreement. This is the law of contracts generally, and what UCEDA did was to adopt it in favor of, or against, I guess I should say, proposals that would regulate contracts in the high-tech industry. It was mentioned earlier that this is an area in which things are changing, in which new industries are becoming manifest at various points in time. And the UCEDA draft basically tries to deal with that issue by recognizing and affirming that contracts control and joining what our current commercial code, the Uniform Commercial Code, in Article 2 dealing with sales of goods, in Article 2A dealing with leases, both of which are enacted in Oregon, following their lead, and that is basically emphasizing the contract freedom. It has been said by some people that UCEDA is not friendly to consumers. The reality is that UCEDA in Section 105 of the Uniform Bill, I'm not sure what the number here is, and Section 105 defers expressly to the consumer law of the state. In another section, it specifically provides that a choice of law provision, that is a contract which tends to or attempts to specify what law controls, cannot change the consumer law of the state whose law would have applied anyhow. So there's actually a fair amount of effort in UCEDA to recognize that commercial issues are different from consumer issues, in that the consumer law of any given state is likely to be different from the consumer law of another state. Beyond the consumer law area, there are roughly, I believe it's 10 or 11 sections of UCEDA or rules in UCEDA that cannot be changed by agreement. All the rest are subject to contrary agreement. UCEDA does not mandate outcomes in agreements. It doesn't prohibit parties from agreeing. It simply provides a roadmap for how agreements might be formed and for what rules would apply if the parties don't talk about the rule in their contract. UCEDA basically has four goals, I suppose, beyond simply affirming the idea of freedom of contract. The first goal is to have contract law be relevant to the subject matter. You may hear today, and I certainly have heard in other settings, that UCEDA is bad because it allows people to license computer information. That is a misstatement of what UCEDA does and also a misstatement of current law. I apologize. I don't know if there's been a case decided in Oregon on this issue. But nationally, the courts are uniformly, in the last few years, at the appellate court level, recognizing that licensing in both the mass market and in commercial markets is not only valid, but it's an enforceable contract. The idea of a license, just so that we can understand, isn't that you take away rights. It's that you essentially grant by contract or arrange by agreement for another person to use information in ways that you would otherwise be able to prevent them from. For example, if I were to sell you a copy of a book, you could read the book, but you couldn't make copies of it. If I were to license you, because I own the copyright, if I were to license that book to you, we might say that, we would certainly say that you could read it, we might say that you could make several backup copies, or that you could make additional copies and distribute them to friends. That's a right that would be created by the contract. In some cases, licenses restrict rights. For example, some products are put out into the mass market, and the license provides that they can only be used for consumer purposes. A different license might, for the exact same software, provide that the same software could be used for commercial purposes. The license would allow or disallow certain types of use. And the idea in the marketplace would be that the consumer use would be a much less expensive license, whereas the commercial use might be a much more expensive process. The point again is, though, that the contracts are contracts, and that USITA essentially recognizes that licensing is current practice in the digital information industries, that it's enforceable by courts or enforced by courts fairly routinely, and tries to deal with questions of how agreements to licenses or other types of digital contracts might be arranged. One of the big areas of concern that I'm sure you will hear about has to do with libraries and the concerns that libraries have about the digital information age. Issues about libraries' rights or library rights under digital information systems have been fought strenuously in international treaty negotiations, in debates in Congress, in debates in the Copyright Office, as well as in connection with USITA. The basic issues are very fundamental, but they don't deal with the idea of contract. They deal with the issue of how does a library survive in a digital information world where people can make copies and access information remotely. As we sit here today, it is common, not only common, it is routine for libraries to engage in licenses and to be licensees. USITA does not create that. It simply creates better rules of the road with reference to protecting both sides. The goal is to make the statute relevant to this type of transaction. In the absence of USITA, the law that applies is either not known, not knowable, or it's just simply not appropriate for the type of transaction that we're involved in. The second goal is uniformity. I participated in both Maryland and Virginia and in the legislative discussions, and there were thorough, extremely thorough analyses at many days of legislative hearings, many more than a state legislature in either of those states would ordinarily have done. The number of changes that were made, all of which were agreed to by the National Conference, and most of which have been incorporated into the uniform bill that you have in front of you, or will be incorporated or proposed for incorporation, were ones that fine-tuned rather than dealt with the substance or the basic structure. There are exceptions. Virginia enacted a library protection amendment that I and a few other people negotiated with the Virginia libraries. Maryland enacted a consumer rule on warranties parallel to the rule they have for sales of goods and essentially keeping parallelism going. But uniformity is important because these are national industries. You can't get on the Internet and act as if you're only in one state. It's international, in fact. The third possibility or the third goal is visibility. I do a lot of consulting. And I know a lot about the law in this area. And if you were to ask me what the law in the 50 states on any one of the issues dealt with in USITA was today, I would have to charge a fair amount to discover that. And in a lot of states, I wouldn't be able to discover it at all because either case law is not present or it's not directly applicable. What you see it is attempting to do is to lay out contract rules in which people can understand from the statute are the rules of the road for their agreements. One of the things that was mentioned was choice of law. It is current law in most states that choice of law clauses are enforceable. UCEDA actually puts restrictions on them to protect, as I said before, consumers and other people. A final point and a final goal was to draw up balanced proposals. This is a political process, as you are very well familiar with. And over the years that John mentioned, there were many meetings and, as I said before, many compromises. We think that UCEDA, we being the National Conference and me personally, think that UCEDA drew good balances. And I just want to mention two to give you an idea. One is an issue that is raised by some opponents talking about number of users. That is, if you acquire a piece of software, how many simultaneous users are presumed if we don't agree to a specific number. UCEDA went through three variations of that, and the final rule that we propose is that the number would be the number of users that would be commercially reasonable in the context. I've heard people actually stand in front of legislative groups and say that a rule which says commercially reasonable is on its face a bad rule. It seems to me that the only option is to have a rule which says commercially unreasonable. And some of the proponents of the other side, I think, argue for that. Current law is silent on this, but the Copyright Act doesn't allow you to make multiple copies. And the case law under copyright law says that you make a copy whenever you turn the machine on. I've heard it said on a second issue that UCEDA makes it possible for people to, software vendors to destroy software remotely. This is what we call electronic self-help. In fact, if you read the statute in Section 816, you will see that UCEDA prohibits electronic self-help in mass market transactions, flat-out prohibition. I know Oregon law doesn't do that because the law of no state does that currently. And then secondly, for all other cases, UCEDA puts very, very difficult procedural and substantive limitations on the use of that remedy. The reality is there are two or three reported cases that allow electronic self-help. There are two or three cases that prohibit it. And UCEDA takes, I think, a very strong position that strongly limits it. I'm going to close so that we don't use up everybody else's time, and I frankly lost track of when I actually started, in all honesty, with a general observation. A lot of what you will hear against UCEDA starts from the premise, from two premises. One is that people should not be free to contract. That is, that we should prohibit various terms, and that if UCEDA doesn't prohibit those terms, it encourages them or enforces them. That, I think, is sort of backwards, because I think the contract is what controls, certainly under UCEDA. The second general point is you will hear a large amount from the opponents about the fact that UCEDA makes it possible to not sell information. The assumption is if you sell information, you get all of the rights you need. The buyer gets all the rights they need at something called a first sale. The answer, reality-wise, is that a buyer at a first sale doesn't get full rights in the information. I mentioned the book before. There are many things you cannot do with a book. A license is just another way of doing a partial or a conditional transaction. It's like a sale, but with different terms. Not like a sale in the sense that title is delivered, but like a sale in the sense that unless you own the copyright, you're not free to do everything you want with the copyrighted work. This is an important legislation. The states of Maryland and Virginia, after closely reviewing this, both adopted UCEDA by very large votes. I think in Virginia there was one negative vote in one of the houses and maybe two in the other. It reflects the importance of the statute that those states and that the people here are willing to put a lot of time into it. I trust that when you all have had a chance to look closely at the proposal, that you'll wind up agreeing with the fact that it draws fair balances and deals with important questions, questions in which there is good faith dispute, but that the dispute should be focused on what the statute actually does rather than what it has been claimed to have done, and focused on the needs of commerce in this area. This state has a growing technology industry. It's fortunate in its location and the quality of the people here. And the technology industries are in substantial need. I was going to say dire, not dire, substantial need of some guidance in terms of basic questions, such as how you form contracts, what the terms might be, and how one deals with contracting in the information economy. Thank you.
Thank you.
Madam Chair, just one final comment.
Yes.
For the record, Jim Craven, AEA. I'm not sure that I said earlier that AEA as a national organization strongly supports adoption of USITA. Our national board took that position over a year ago, and I didn't want to anyone to think I was just up here as a talk show host to let you know that our organization strongly supports adoption of House Bill 3910. Thank you.
Thank you very much. I appreciate that. Okay. Paula Holm. And I think, is Peter Bragan with you, Paula Holm? Okay. Can we make this real brief?
Yes. I think we
Thank
can.
Thank you.
My name is Paula Holm Jensen. I'm with Stoll Reeves and in Portland. And I'm here on behalf of the Computer and Electronic Information Work Group of the Oregon State Bar. And specifically, I am chair of the subcommittee that's been looking at USITA. The work group was formed this fall to look at various bills that would be coming up related to internet commerce and computer information. And in the beginning, we focused on UEDA, which is currently House Bill 2112, and USITA, and put most of our energy into UEDA because we felt that that would definitely be coming up and was likely to be passed this session. You've heard testimony already that USITA has only been adopted in two states. Those states have both had amendments already, and those amendments are some of what's attached to my testimony, just to give you an idea of some of the changes that are happening. And there has been one set of technical corrections already adopted, I believe, by the Executive Committee of NACUSL in January, and that is also attached. I do not believe that the I haven't checked it point by point, but I don't believe that HB 3910 currently reflects any of these amendments, but as I said, I have not checked those directly. But those are some of the issues that are still going on. And basically, at the moment, USITA is still a bit of a moving target. What the CEI work group has been looking at in general is how to advise the legislature, how the bar is going to take a position as to what needs to be done in the area of laws related to internet commerce. And in the case of USITA, kind of jumping forward, I think our recommendation right now is that it be studied further to determine exactly how to implement it in Oregon. Some changes need to be made, as Professor Nimmer pointed out. Much of the commercial laws that govern transactions in physical goods are not particularly appropriate or do not fit neatly into transactions in digital goods. And so there are changes that need to be made. The first change was with UEDA and getting electronic signatures and the basic concept of being able to form a contract online, getting that settled. And we believe that is likely to pass this session. And so that sets the foundation. That gives us the basic framework to go forward into the more complex issues that USITA presents. but because of the various controversies and because of the ongoing amendments and negotiations that you will hear more about, we think that the legislature should take some time and study this before, hopefully, next session, going forward and passing a bill to update the laws of Oregon to deal with Internet commerce.
Thank you, Ms. Jensen.
Thank you, Madam Chairman.
Go ahead.
Well, my name is Peter Bragdon. I'm an attorney in Portland, and I am here because I chaired the Legal Infrastructure Subcommittee of the Internet Commission. I'm going to be very brief, but I did want to just appear to let you know that we studied this issue because we were asked to look at the important legal issues related to the Internet economy. And in no uncertain terms, we definitely believe this is near the top of the list of legal issues that need to be addressed in the state. We endorsed very much the need for predictable and uniform law and updating our commercial code. But we also felt that it didn't need to be updated today. We needed to be moving quickly and making progress on that. But it was clear to us in the time that we had and with the resources, our limited resources, that there were a lot of very smart, dedicated people on both sides of this issue with genuine concerns or issues related to it. So we felt that it was important to move and make progress quickly, but not to pass it without studying it in depth. And I think what Paula has mentioned is that progress is starting to be made, but we're not probably there yet in terms of studying this issue thoroughly.
Okay. Thank you very much. Federally has arrived. Did you have a question?
No. Thank
okay.
You.
All right. Thank you very much. Okay. We have some people from out of town. I'm going to try to get them next. Jeffrey Burling and Gary Miller.
Cool.
I have someone here from Prudential. Is that Todd Thayer? John Mangan? Are they here from out of town also? Thank you. Please, gentlemen, go ahead.
Okay.
Start here on your left, my right.
All right. Yeah. My name is Jeff Burling, and I'm a worker in the computer industry. You might sum up my duties as when something breaks, several years was a guy you called who helped you fix it. Then I became the guy who actually fixed it behind the scenes, and now my job is QA, or I get to break it and try to get the customer to fix it. So I would say I know how consumers work with this. Listening to some of the testimony earlier, I would say one thing that comes up is a lot of people who will be buying this have had no idea how to put input into this process. And we are all operating under the impression that the law of first sale, that is, like was said before, you buy a book, basically you have it, but it's not so much a license, but you physically have the book, you can loan it to a friend, you can sell it to someone else. You can use it to prop open a window. It is your property, although there are limits to it. One thing that's happened is with this, it limits what is called reverse engineering. That is basically observing how software works and trying to figure out how it breaks and figure it. Like I said, I've been on the phone, I've talked to people. Tell me what you see, what happens. And there are tools that get into this very deeply. Reverse assemblers. Under Unix, there's such a thing called S-Trace that tells you what happens step by step. My understanding of this law, it prohibits that. You're breaking their intellectual property. In fact, you could be required to sign a non-disclosure agreement. Several companies presently do that, such as Oracle, Network Associates, who manufacture antivirus software. At current, the law stands Sega versus Accolade, 1992, this is permissible. In fact, it's your right to handle this. Currently, people are using software that has been developed because it was reverse engineered. The common PC was developed through reverse engineering. Someone Compaq sat down, looked at how the BIOS worked,
turned around, built their own computers without a license to IBM. As a result, cost of PCs have gone down. As I said, this would very drastically reduce our ability to use the software we think we buy and we own. In fact, it gives up this right without any true ability to benefit from it. We go from being a shareholder in technology to a sharecropper. I could go on, but I did want to bring up that point and the fact that we are giving up this right without anything in return.
Thank you very much, Mr. Burling. Okay, Gary Miller.
Madam Chairwoman and committee members, my name is Gary Miller. I'm president of Relima Consulting Engineering Company in Bend. I'm here representing my company and also others such as Wirex in Portland and Fluence in Beaverton and a number of interested individuals who've encouraged me to come here today. They've encouraged me to come here to oppose UCEDA, formerly UCC2B, as a lot of others have opposed it. 26 attorneys general have opposed it. The Association of Computing Machinery, the Free Software Foundation, the Institute for Electrical and Electronics Engineers, the Software Engineering Institute, Consumer Federation of America, and on and on and on have all been on record opposing that. I have a list that I can present later of people opposing it. Contract law is very important. It's important to all of us in everything we do in our life, whether it's high tech or whether it's hay. Certainly, the ability to license a contract between individuals is very important, and that's why we already have a very large number of legal protections written into our laws in this state and federally, plus a lot of case law. You see the attempts to sweep out a lot of these existing protections and replace those time-honored legal precedents with its own law, which is, as admitted here earlier, was drafted not by technical people but by people in states that were called high-tech, like Virginia. It was mentioned earlier that there was a freedom to contract, and that UCEDA is very important. And I would think in those parts of UCEDA, there's just a restatement of existing law and no need to have a new law. Where UCEDA starts to break legal ground as opposed to court precedent is in the mass market licensing. It removes a lot of existing consumer protections. Right now, if you buy a car, the sticker has to state on it what the fees are. Everything has to be up front. But with software, I can go in and buy a piece of software and not find out key conditions of the software until I've gone home, installed the software, run the software for the first time, and then be informed of some licensing restrictions like number of users that were not required to be in the box. Now, UCEDA does allow me to then return that to the store without cost and, in fact, to then attempt to bill back my time and effort in terms of installing the software. So it comes to mind myself going back to Freddy's and saying, hey, I just spent 4 hours installing this software, and I want you to pay me for my time in the 2 hours of the $20 the software cost. I don't think that's going to happen. Right now, most stores will have a sign up front that says if you break the seal on a piece of software, that's it, you're done. So we're going to have a substantial conflict with existing practice in the software industry. It makes it impossible for me to go into a store and do comparison shopping. I would literally have to buy something, take it back, install it, read the license, go back. This is a piece of law that's being worked on right now, and UCEDA goes the wrong way. There's no freedom to contract between myself and large electronics companies. You know, I buy the box and it's it. If I don't want it, I take it back. This is a very important part of the law that UCEDA messes up. Another part of the UCEDA that I find very dangerous, a large part of my work is in computer security, network security, and the electronic self-help, which is not part of the mass market software, but is part of the other, is a very dangerous precedent, which in other parts of the law has been disallowed. like you can't leave a dangerous trap in your house to catch burglars. Certainly only burglars would get it, but it's a dangerous thing to have lying around. In the Internet, we have enough problems with breakers and hack-ins and spammers to have a legally enabled trapdoor in a software that can be installed without any legal liability whatsoever. Okay, if they want to take the risk of putting in a lock on their software, they should at least be required to endure the liability that they would incur by having it go off at the wrong time. You can imagine driving down the freeway in your car and having the wheels fall off by the lease contract expiring. And even if it was an accident, it would come back and say, well, you know, the law says that we're allowed to install these self-help devices, and you agreed to it, and it went off by accident. We're very sorry. Even the best minds make mistakes, and I've seen these devices go wrong in horrible ways. In some other nits on the bill, it reverses a lot of existing credit card protections. I think it's been stated that something like 30% of the websites in the United States have been broken into in the last 2 years. Cases like Amazon, where 300,000 credit cards are stolen over the case of 3 months, and they find about that later after so many people complain that they're getting extra charges. You see that it turns it around and puts the presumption of fraud back on the customer instead of on the vendor. Right now, if your card is used fraudulently, you can you're limited by federal law to $50. And you see that it turns this around, and if your electronic signature has been used, then you've lost your rights right there. So if somebody's broken into Amazon, you've lost all your rights. Finally, these are all things that could be fixed, except for there's no way they can be fixed. There cannot be tinkering with this bill because of the venue clause. Any shrink wrap license can put any venue he wants. If I'm here in Oregon and the vendor is in Idaho, I could see there's a legal case whether the contract should be decided under Idaho law or Oregon law. But that vendor could have it under Puerto Rico law. So he can pick the venue that's going to have the absolute most beneficial venue to his case. So even if all these things get fixed in Oregon, if the shrink wrap license comes in and says you're going to educate in Puerto Rico, then I have to go to Puerto Rico to fight this over a $20 piece of software. So the bill needs a lot of work. I mean, there's things that need to be done in contract law. There are a few things that are different in the Internet age. But in general, things are just faster, and the existing contract law has served us very well.
Thank you. Please.
Good afternoon. My name is Todd Thacker. I'm here on behalf of Prudential Insurance Company of America and also the American Council of Life Insurers and a broad coalition that Prudential of other businesses in addition to insurance industry that Prudential is a part of. And, you know, we fully support the notion of contracting, but we have grave concerns about contracts being subject to contracts that we can't read until after we purchase a product. And our overriding concern is the UCITA's validation of shrink-wrapped licenses, agreements which accompany products such as software programs, which are enclosed with the product in a shrink-wrap cellophane wrapping. Such licenses are seen by licensees for the first time when they unwrap the package after we have made the purchase, thereby agreeing to the terms. And Prudential has looked at this, and we believe that the implications on our ability to do business are severe, and that if UCITA were to pass, that it would cost us $20 million annually. Then that's just our company. And there's been a lot of talk that two states have, you know, looked at it seriously and endorsed it. What we didn't hear is that at least a dozen states have looked seriously at UCITA, and only the first two states out last year looked at it. All the other states have enacted it. The other states have looked at it, didn't enact it this year, and so far no states have enacted it last year, and so far no states have done it this year. And really, I think it's because it's very controversial. There's a lot of issues that need to be resolved.
Thank you very much. Representative Shetterly.
Just a question. It will cost Prudential $20 million. How?
Well, first of all, we'll, you know, in a number of different ways. And you talk about the self-help. If we have all of our systems up and working and servicing our customers, and whoever we buy our software products from can reach into our systems and shut us down, then we're not going to be, you know, then we're going to have incur costs of just normal costs of doing business. And then also in the nature of the way that the, with the shrink wrap licenses and things, our, the balance is so in favor of the software companies that our ability to negotiate are going to be severely compromised, and it's going to cost us substantially more to, for products that we're, than we're paying for right now.
Okay. Thank you, gentlemen, very much. Was John Mangan going to testify with Prudential? No? Okay. Thank you. Okay. Chuck Bennett, COSA, Thor Richard, OETC. And would Ben Rollins mind coming up also?
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Chuck Bennett. I represent the Confederation of Oregon School Administrators. I'm here with Thor Pritchard, Executive Director of Oregon Educational Technology Consortium. COSA is opposed to House Bill 3910. We've supplied you with written information from the Oregon Educational Technology Consortium. Just very briefly, we believe that under House Bill 3910, schools would lose the ability to negotiate common terms of software licensing. The bill allows software publishers to shut down mission-critical software remotely without court approval and without incurring liability for the foreseeable harm caused. USETA would severely restrict the ability of schools to take advantage of aggregated cooperative purchasing of software, to the restrictions on transfer of software licenses in the bill. And under the bill, the electronic assent to agreement and notification of changes in terms is minimal and insufficient to inform all interested parties in schools. Also, House Bill 3910 would shield software publishers from liability for damage caused by defects known to the software publisher. And we'll be glad to go through the sections that are of concern to us. We find this bill to be really detrimental to public school use of software under the way we're using it in Oregon.
Thank you, Mr. Bennett. Please.
This is Thor Pritchard, Executive Director of OETC. I just want to add quickly to Chuck's testimony that we've been working with schools for nearly two decades on software licensing, and the present law has suited schools very well. It has saved them hundreds of thousands, if not millions of dollars over that time. And the USETA law will not help that at all. It could, in fact, make it more difficult for schools to do the savings they have afforded themselves in the past 20 years. So, thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr. Pritchard. Mr. Rollins.
Good afternoon, Madam Chairman. I come to you on behalf of the Oregon University System. We come before you today not arguing against the need for consistency or uniformity in laws. Rather, we are concerned about the breadth of the current version of the USETA that is before you. In terms of the potential effect on universities, you have written testimony that is being circulated, but I'll summarize in terms of four areas of concern. There's great concern regarding the shrink wrap and click-on licensing provisions of the USETA. These provisions would become a legally acceptable method to enter into a license agreement. Here, OUS is damaged not only as a consumer, but as an agency of the state of Oregon. Shrink wrap and click-on provisions would become binding agreements by any employee who opened the package or clicked on an icon. Thus, a single employee is bestowed with the authority to bind the state of Oregon. The state has thus lost the ability to have terms which are contrary to state law or which are contrary to the advice of the Attorney General, modified or negotiated out of such agreements. In that respect, such provisions are contrary to Oregon public policy. Second concern we'll classify as the marketplace of ideas. Our colleges and universities are built on the necessity that they are the marketplace of ideas. Intellectual property, a cornerstone of ideas, has traditionally been governed by copyright law, which permits the time-honored concepts of fair use and first sale. These concepts hold that a university, as an initial purchaser, has sufficient interest in the idea to permit libraries, teaching, and research use. UCEDA would eliminate that degree of usage and regard all usages as requiring a license. Thus, the use necessary for education will be severely hampered, the education that forms the foundation of every professor's interaction with his students and her students. In this regard, UCEDA's shift from copyright law to contract law represents a shift from societal interest in fair and workable limits for the free flow of ideas to a focus instead on economics. We're concerned about reverse engineering because closely associated with the restrictions on the free flow of ideas is the concerns that UCEDA would harm the capability to restrict educational endeavors such as research, teaching, debugging activities, ensuring interoperability between systems, and security testing, some of the very foundations which give rise to new innovation would be further restricted by the current terms of UCEDA. Lastly, we are concerned about the potential abridgment and chilling effect on First Amendment freedoms. By being a licensee, there is the potential that UCEDA could restrict public comment about a license by a person who has signed the license agreement. And therefore, we feel that there is a definite chilling effect in terms of First Amendment for purchasers who are in the licensing line. These are but some of the more graphic examples of how UCEDA greatly exceeds the generic principles of creating uniform laws. The legitimate need for some consistency does not justify such an extreme revamping of laws and principles on consumer protection, privacy, the First Amendment, or permissible and necessary exchange of ideas. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Any questions? Thank you, gentlemen, very much. We have Deb Carver, Cindy Gibbon, and Nan Heim.
Thank you, Madam Chair, Representative Shetterly. I'm Nan Heim, and I'm here today on behalf of the Oregon Library Association. Our organization has over 1,000 members, Oregonians who are affiliated with all kinds of libraries, public, university, college, school, etc. And judging from the emails and other messages that I've received in the past year and a half, you see this strikes fear in the hearts of all 1,000 members of our organization. With me today to explain our concerns and opposition to House Bill 3910 are two of our members. Deb Carver is director of the University of Oregon's Library. She is past president of our association and Oregon's representative on the American Library Association Council. Also to explain the public library's perspective is Cindy Gibbon, director of Multnomah County Central Library. And Deb will go first.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Again, I'm Deborah Carver. I'm the university librarian at the University of Oregon, here representing the Oregon Library Association. First of all, let me say that I'm very reassured by the growing opposition to UCEDA. Libraries sometimes feel alone on the front line talking about issues relating to copyright and fair use. But in the case of UCEDA, it's very reassuring to have the company of businesses, consumer groups, the insurance companies, some major industries, coalitions of law professors, and even some smaller software developers. Oregon's libraries have many concerns and worries about UCEDA. In the interest of time, I want to just summarize three of our concerns. One is that we believe that UCEDA will limit our ability to negotiate terms and conditions on behalf of our users. Libraries are significant consumers of software and electronic databases. Most of us now have highly trained staff who routinely negotiate these licenses. I myself have negotiated several dozen on behalf of the University of Oregon and also on behalf of all of Oregon's libraries. These licenses take time, they take expertise and patience, but perhaps most importantly, they take a commitment to the values of research, education, and equitable access. In my opinion, these final contracts are mutually beneficial to both the vendors and the library users. Unfortunately, USITA validates and promotes the use of non-negotiated licenses. And let me give you an example. Under USITA, it's very conceivable that a database or software vendor could require each student or faculty member to agree to a standard form contract or click-through license that unfairly restricted his use to legitimate use of the resource. By clicking on I agree, the user more often than not will have unknowingly forfeited many rights and privileges that are now granted under copyright law. Our second concern is that USITA appears to apply to mixed media. That is, the restrictions that apply to electronic resources could also carry forward and apply to the print. And I brought forward an example to show you. This is a recent purchase by the University of Oregon Library. It's a book on designing curriculum for science literacy. In the back is a CD-ROM. Now, under USITA, the CD-ROM could very well come with a shrink wrap license with some restrictions that also apply to the book that we purchased. Those restrictions could limit our ability to lend this book to a student, to a faculty member, to another library or a school. In other words, the value of this important resource is diminished. Our third concern is that we just frankly believe that USITA gives too much power and control to a handful of large high-tech companies. For two centuries now, copyright has provided the primary legal framework for balancing the interests of the users of information on the one hand and the owners of copyrighted information on the other. And we firmly believe that USITA disrupts this balance. The interests of the consumer have to be respected and protected if the information economy is going to thrive in this state. USITA may very well have some short-term benefits for a small segment of the new economy, but we believe that in the long term, no one's interests are served if information becomes too restrictive and there are new penalties on legitimate uses, particularly educational uses. So, in closing, the library profession has deep concerns about USITA and its impact on our ability to purchase software and to license electronic resources and to make them freely available to our users. Without explicit recognition of the legal priority that federal copyright policy has, USITA poses a threat to our educational mission. So what would we like to see happen now? I think I agree with many of the statements that have been made. I'd like to see a full study of USITA. I hope that the library perspective can be part of that study. I hope that we'll take time to monitor the developments and debate that's occurring in other states. I hope we take the long view on the information economy, and absolutely, I hope we do everything to protect the educational interests of Oregon citizens. Thank you.
Thank you.
Please.
Madam Chair, I'm Cindy Gibbon, Director of the Multnomah County Central Library, and I thank you for the opportunity to be here today. You do have a copy of my written testimony, and I will not attempt to do much more than just quickly summarize what's there, because I will be talking about what Deb Carver has talked about and what many others here today have already mentioned. At Multnomah County Library, like all of the other public libraries within the state of Oregon and throughout this nation, we serve the public, providing them with the information that they need. More and more today, that information comes in electronic form. And that presents some challenges for us, particularly within the framework of USITA. We, too, are concerned about the shift from copyright law to contract law when it comes to information that happens to come in an electronic form. We also have mixed media transactions in the public library, just as the university library does, situations where a book comes packaged with some form of electronic media. We know that the electronic media is likely to be covered by USITA. The book is covered by copyright. maybe we can lend the book, maybe we can't lend the electronic piece that comes with it. Maybe the license on the electronic media will also cover the book and make it impossible for us to do what copyright law allows us to do, even with the print material. We're concerned about prohibitions against reverse engineering. Rarely does it happen that our IT professionals at the library don't have to do some kind of work of that nature with the software that we purchase. We are also concerned about electronic self-help, and not only from the security perspective. Many people who come to the library, the public library, do it electronically from their own home computer. The provisions of electronic self-help may make it possible for corporations to get more information than you would like them to have about how you are using information in the library. We try very hard to protect the privacy and confidentiality of library users. You may actually be in a situation where not only in the library but also from your home, your office, or your classroom, you are using library resources in an environment where the lack of security that is inherent in the ability to have electronic self-help may also make it possible to gain information about your use of the information. We're concerned about the validation of mass market licenses and how that may encourage mass market licenses, even in situations where we now currently have the ability to negotiate. We're concerned that software companies may be able to waive liability for known defects. We're happy to hear that the choice of law and choice of forum issue may be taken care of by legislation that has been introduced that would make sure that Oregon law would prevail in a dispute between a customer in Oregon and a software company. And we also have some concerns about the First Amendment and the issue of whether shrink wrap and click-on licenses or even negotiated licenses might prohibit the consumer from making comments about what might not be the best aspects of a piece of software, particularly in the public library where many people come to get their consumer information and expect to be able to find information to help them purchase a product. The idea that we would voluntarily allow someone to tell us that we can't talk about what might be wrong with a piece of software or that others might not be able to talk about it seems to make it impossible for us to continue to do the job that the people expect us to be able to do for them. I would also say we certainly hope that this committee will give careful consideration to USITA, that it may be perhaps studied in the interim rather than adopted immediately, that there will be a chance to make appropriate amendments, and that we will go forward slowly with this law that makes very sweeping changes in the way that we do business.
Thank you very much. Appreciate your testimony, ladies.
Thank you.
Carl Page.
Madam Chair.
Yes.
I have another commitment.
Sure.
Up in Seattle.
That's just fine.
Great. Thank you.
That's just fine.
You can go ahead if you'd like, John. I'm Carl Page. Thank you, Madam Chair. Good afternoon. My name is Len Johnson. I work for the Boeing Company. My title is Industry Affairs Manager, and with my job, I'm responsible for managing information technology and telecommunication policy issues for the Boeing Company. I appreciate the opportunity to be here today. I won't go over a lot of the issues that previous speakers have already covered because we concur with a lot of most of the points that were already presented this afternoon. But I will tell you, I wanted to just kind of cut to the bottom line what USITA means to the Boeing Company. And I also want to let you know that Weyerhaeuser is here today also in opposition of USITA. But what it means to large businesses, small businesses, in my opinion, is that USITA is going to increase the cost of doing business for our companies. You heard a lot of concerns this afternoon about self-help, electronic regulation of performance, number of users, duration of contract. All of these kinds of issues mean additional costs for our companies. And scoping these dollars out is sometimes difficult, but the bottom line is you're going to end up spending a lot more money negotiating in your procurement organization, your legal staff. You're going to probably need additional folks or revise your process in the security part of your operation. All of these things combined together mean additional cost to our company. The Boeing Company in Oregon, we have about 2,000 people. We spend roughly $200 million with 500 different companies in this state. When you start talking about increasing the cost of doing business here, it's not just with the Boeing Company, but we have 500 other suppliers in this state that we're also concerned about. So it's not just the Boeing Company. It's a large scope of users that we're focused on. Boeing is in support of uniformity in a Model State Act like this. However, we feel that the act, the way it's currently written, is very one-sided and would make it very difficult for us to do business in the state. So we urge you to take a very close look at this House bill. But again, I think it does need a tremendous amount of work to get to a point where it's fair for everyone.
Thank you, Mr. Johnson. Please.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm Carl Page. I'm Northwestern Director for Computer Professionals for Social Responsibility, a grassroots group of computer professionals that are interested in the implications of computing on society. I'm also a member of the IEEE, the largest electronics organization, and I'm also a member of the ACM. Both, I don't speak for those two groups, but they are also both on record against USITA. The reason CPSR is against USITA is because not because of an opposition to using contract law more, but because USITA makes it so darned easy to get into a contract without even realizing it, and in fact to have that contract changed without your knowledge or approval under you. Another important point to make, it's been admitted that USITA wasn't written by technology professionals, and it really shows in one important way. Nearly everything you buy these days, whether you're Boeing buying a $100,000 machine for a factory, or whether you're a person attempting to buy a VCR, those products all come with bundled software that's necessary for their use. And if we change the consumer protection laws to weaken the protections that we get as customers, or as, quote, product owners, unquote, an idea that may very well go by the wayside, we will all become product licensees of software that is essential to operate the things we think we own. For an example, if you try to buy a VCR today and you choose carefully, you'll probably end up coming home with a TiVo or a Replay TV, which is actually just a office PC repackaged as the best darn VCR you'll ever find. But it runs software. It even runs network software. And so it very well could be subject to the self-help and click-through licensing agreements that are so onerous and hard for consumers to understand and get out of. So, beware that USITA actually covers nearly every product that anyone would want to buy. It can make cars stop working, potentially, or televisions. There may very well be one of those licenses inside the shrink wrap around a whole big television that you would uncover only as you unpackage the darn thing. You might not notice it amidst the huge pile of shrink wrap. So there's very little chance that this reduction in consumer protection will benefit anyone. I should also say that the fact that large organizations of computer professionals and software professionals oppose this indicates that it's not the software industry that really wants it, but only a few of the dominant software companies. In fact, its act creates so much anxiety on the part of customers buying software that it may actually hurt the industry as a whole. While I do believe that giving Microsoft more power to extract money from its customers probably won't hurt too much, I have to point out that the Internet makes it easy to conduct business with thousands of little software companies just by merely clicking on their websites. And many of them are unscrupulous. So we need to consider what this reduction in consumer protection will do when unleashed upon consumers in their contracts with thousands of companies that they meet with only through the web. Thank you very much for your time. I appreciate it.
Well, thank you both for your testimony. Thank you. And we have Pete Shepard and Steve Telfer.
Go ahead, Pete. Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Pete Shepard. I'm the Deputy Attorney General
I'll very briefly accept Professor Nimmer's challenge to focus on the actual text of the measure. And to do that, I'll use one very short example drawn from the not-too-distant future, when it's likely that we'll be able to download movies in digital form as easily as we now download software. So suppose I sign up for the Myers Digital Movie Service, and I select the All Marx Brothers All the Time option, and I get the Marx Brothers movie of my choice each month. I pay in advance with my credit card, and in the click wrap, as it's described, contract that I agree to by clicking on OK, there are two important terms. One is a term that's called under the Act a future changes clause, and second, a term that defines the place at which I am to go to find notices as the website of the Myers Digital Movie Service. Now, a month or two into the contract, the Myers Digital Movie Service changes their service from All Marx Brothers All the Time to All Adult All the Time. The question is, under current law, am I obliged to continue to pay or to get a refund for those, for the amount that I've already paid? And what is the answer under UCITA? Under current law, I would not be obliged to continue to pay under those circumstances, because there had not been a clear and conspicuous notice to me that the terms, the fundamental terms of that agreement, had been changed. That notice would not have been delivered to me in a way that met the requirements of the Unlawful Trade Practices Act or the rules that the Department of Justice has adopted pursuant to that act. Under UCITA, what is the answer? Well, the beginning of the answer is in Section 34 on page 22, lines 31 through 35. And the short answer, when one works through those lines of text, is that this contract is probably enforceable against me under UCITA. But Professor Nimmer tells us that UCITA has a savings clause for consumer protection laws. Leave aside the question, the uncertainty of what constitutes a consumer protection law, as that is an undefined term in the Act, but clearly the Unlawful Trade Practices Act would qualify, one would hope, as a consumer protection law. That exception, that savings clause in the Oregon version of the proposal, is on page 11, lines 17 through 20. It's section 105 of the Act. And doesn't that language, the language that provides that UCITA does not control if it conflicts with a consumer protection statute or administrative rule, doesn't that get me out of the obligation to continue to pay for the Myers Digital Movie Service, even though it's now delivering adult content rather than the Marx Brothers? And the answer to that is no, in spite of what Professor Nimmer told the committee a few moments ago. And the reason for that is in lines 27 and 28 on page 11. That part of UCITA provides that although the general rule may be that UCITA gives way to a consumer protection law with which it conflicts, that's not true with respect to the question of a requirement that a term be conspicuous or the like. And under UCITA, it is sufficient in the definition of conspicuous. It would be sufficient if that original click-wrap license that I agreed to way back when I first signed up, if that license met the definition of conspicuous, that is, the terms in that license that allowed the Myers Digital Movie Service to change the content. It would be sufficient if the terms in that disclosure met the definition of conspicuous under the Act. That definition would not satisfy current law with respect to the ability of a provider of ongoing service to change the terms of that service. And I submit to you that that at least is one example where UCITA would override an existing consumer protection. The gist of that and many other uncertainties about UCITA have led the Attorney General to conclude that this is an idea that we ought not adopt this session, that rather it's a complex matter that deserves the careful scrutiny of an interim study. To sum it up very briefly, we have the opportunity here to allow people in other states to be the lab rats for UCITA. and we ought to take advantage of that. They apparently have volunteered to do that, and we ought to see how they're treated. And we shouldn't do that to Oregonians yet.
Thank you.
Madam Chair and Representative Lowe and Representative Wilson, good afternoon. For the record, my name is Steve Telfer. I represent the Alliance of American Insurers, which is a national trade association of property casualty insurers. I'm also the, designated messenger today of the insurance industry at large. Owing to the late hour and knowing that you have a 5 o'clock hearing, I'm rather than rehashing what you've already heard all afternoon, I'm simply going to refer to you two documents that I believe you have. One is a letter dated yesterday to the Honorable Max Williams, who chairs the Judiciary Committee. It's a letter that's been authorized by 5 trade associations in the insurance industry and 23 separate insurers. So in other words, it's a very, very large assemblage of companies. The second document that I'm going to refer you to is a reprint of an October 23rd, year 2000 article in Business Insurance, authored by John Lobert, who's a senior vice president of the Alliance. Both of these documents, I think, do a pretty decent job of explaining the concerns the insurance industry has about USITA. Frankly, most of the items that have been mentioned in previous testimony are very much on mark with our concerns. As you're, I'm sure, aware, the insurance industry is very heavily reliant on computers for purposes of processing claims, maintaining files on policyholders, and so on. And when you shift the burden, as USITA apparently does, and I profess right up front I'm no expert on this, but certainly can understand that if you move the burden on these contract laws with shrink wrap and click contracts, you really put insurers and their policyholders at real potential jeopardy. With that, I think I'm going to wrap up. I would be happy to answer questions, and we do have available a variety of other materials, so that in the event the committee wants to further study this, we'd be happy to provide those.
Thank you very much, Mr. Telfer. I appreciate all of you being here today and your patience and cooperation and your testimony. We are going to get finished in time for them to set up for the next hearing. So thank you very much. Appreciate it. I'm going to close the public hearing on House Bill 3910.